Ready for the show? I'm ready to start.
10, 9, ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11. Tower clear.
Roger.
Well, hello, my beloved family and friends who are listening. This is your host speaking, Martin Horst. This show is called ET First Contact Radio, and I would like to welcome new listeners who are new to the show. And my guest is Mercedes Kirkel, and she is the author of a wonderful book, Mary Magdalene Beckens, Join the River of Love. And right now, Mary is with me. Mercedes, welcome to the show, Mercedes.
Hello, Martin. Thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be here.
Yes, my friend Donald sent me your request, and I got it by email, and I thought that your information and the energy of Mary Magdalene is very interesting in the development of our consciousness, especially in this time of our evolution. So I thought, anything that you want to share about your book and about the role that Mary Magdalene plays now in our evolution, you're very welcome to share with us.
Oh, thank you so much. I agree. I feel like Mary Magdalene is at the forefront right now of the movement that so many are involved in, of helping us to move forward in consciousness and through that into higher dimensions. And I guess I'd like to start with sharing the story about how Mary Magdalene came to me, because it's a fairly new thing, and I think it helps people to understand my story about Mary and how I came to it.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. So there's a long version and a short version. The long version is in the book and is way too long for me to tell here on a radio program. So I'll give the short version. And the short version starts in the fall of 2009, when I was living on the big island of Hawaii. And I received a message from Spirit that I was supposed to leave the big island. And this was a surprise. I thought I was going to be living on the big island for the rest of my life. And so I checked the message out three times just to make sure. I had received messages from Spirit many times in the past, and I had learned from experience that whenever I followed the messages, they turned out to be for my highest good and much better than I could have orchestrated on my own. So I had learned to trust when I received messages, but this was asking me to do the biggest thing I had ever been asked to do in terms of making a major move. But the message was very consistent, so I decided to follow it. And took a few months to close up my affairs. And then in the spring of 2010, I left the big island. But the message didn't tell me where I was supposed to go. It just said I was supposed to leave where I was. So I didn't know where to go. So I went to visit my family. And turned out that my family needed some help, and I was very glad to be able to offer some help to my family. And so I spent a few months with my family, doing a little traveling to sacred sites during that time, and all the while wondering, where am I supposed to be? Where is my home? And finally, my assistance to my family ended at the beginning of July in 2010, and right at that time I received several messages that through a sequence of events guided me to Santa Fe, New Mexico. And as soon as I arrived here, I instantly knew this was where I was supposed to be. It was so clear. All the signs were there, and my heart could read it like a neon sign. So I settled in Santa Fe, and within a couple of days of arriving here, I was meditating one morning, and I suddenly felt this very strong presence that was different than anything I'd ever experienced before. And it was centered around my throat. And I had the sense that there was a blockage in my throat that was keeping this presence from coming through. So I put all my intention on releasing whatever in me was blocking and obstructing this presence. And all of a sudden, this voice started speaking through me. And I instantly knew this was the voice of Mary Magdalene. And she gave me a phenomenal message, a very detailed, considered message, and it was like a perfect essay that she gave me. And I was just in awe. And this took, you know, a number of minutes, I don't know how long, to receive the whole thing. And then when she was complete, I just was left in this state of wonderment and complete bliss, because not only did I receive this phenomenal message, but also receiving the presence of Mary Magdalene, feeling her energy so strongly, is just an incredible experience. So I was just in this state of amazement and bliss until I had a thought that was very disturbing to me. And that thought was, I'm not going to remember this. And I thought that was unacceptable. I had to remember this incredible gift she had just given me. And so without hesitating a moment, I asked her if she would give me the message again so that I could type it into my computer. And she said, yes, she would. And I went and got my computer, and she gave me the entire message verbatim again, word for word, identical. what that did for me, not only did it allow me to receive the message and record it, but it confirmed for me that this was really Mary Magdalene, because I couldn't have done that. I could not have recreated that message. And so this was extremely significant. And this was the beginning of a month-long period where she came to me every day and gave me a message over the course of this month, so that by the end of the month, I had received 25 messages. And early on in this process, it was obvious that she was giving me a book. And every time the messages came through, just like the first, in perfect format. And her brilliance was just unmistakable. And the chapters had a whole progression to them. This was clearly a book she was giving me. And that she also communicated to me that she was entrusting me to get this book out to everyone who she has a connection with and everyone who could be helped by this material. And I felt like that was a huge number of people. So that was how this all started. And by the time that month-long period had ended, I had her book. And then the other thing that happened was, as I was receiving these messages, I started to share them with certain people. And I got very consistent feedback that they thought the messages were amazing and exquisite, and that they didn't completely understand what she was communicating. Now, this was very surprising to me, because to me it was crystal clear. I understood every single thing with perfect clarity, it seemed. So I was surprised about this, but I definitely took it in. And within a short period of time, Mary communicated to me that she wanted me to help people to understand the book. And what she wanted me to do was, after each of her messages in the book, she wanted me to write a commentary. And the commentary would serve a couple of purposes. One is that her style of communicating is incredibly condensed. She says so much using so few words. And she said what she wanted me to do was to spread it out a little bit, to take the different ideas and separate them, tease them out, and add explanation so that it would help people to really understand all the things she was communicating. And the other thing she wanted me to do was to add my personal stories to the messages and to the ideas she was presenting, to help people to understand what does this actually mean in our ordinary, everyday human life. And so after the month-long period of receiving her messages, I started my work, which was writing all the commentary. And that took me a little over a year, and that's the basic format of the book. It's 25 chapters, one for each message, and it begins with Mary's message, and then it's followed by my commentary.
That's quite an interesting story. Pardon me, Mercedes. Could you maybe
Oh, I think I may have lost you. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me, Mercedes?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. So could you ask your question again? I wasn't able to hear it.
Okay. Could you maybe go into the messages itself a bit for Mary Magdalene, into the what she is saying and what her message is for humankind at this time we are living?
Yes, I would be very happy to do that. Her very first message, the first words that she spoke were, "I am here. Do not doubt my presence. Doubt is part of your mind. I am here to help free you from your doubting mind." Now, I felt that she was speaking this very specifically to me, because this is one of my strong challenges in life, is that I have a lot of self-doubt. And I felt like she immediately picked up on that. And of course, the minute Mary Magdalene started coming to me, the first thing I started doubting was the whole experience. How could this be possible? Why would Mary Magdalene be coming to me? And why would she ever pick someone like me? So she was completely addressing everything that was going on with me. And again, so succinctly with so few words. But I also felt like she wasn't just speaking to me, that she was communicating to everyone who experiences doubt in any form. And this was part of the way she communicated. She would communicate to me what was going on with me, but it would always have a much larger context and meaning that I felt like could be valuable for so many people. But as soon as she had completed that first part of her message where she was talking about me, telling me, do not doubt, she moved into what I considered a more universal message. And it seemed like that was what she really wanted to be talking about. That was what she was bringing forth, what she transitioned into. And what she started talking about, I would like to just read you from the very beginning of the book from this first message, because I think, again, her words express it so well. And this was the very next thing she began with. I have waited 2,000 years to come forth for the turning of the ages when the divine feminine can be received, honored, and reinstated in her rightful place as the equal partner and lover of the divine masculine. There is much to be done for this to be accomplished. She has suffered much repression and denial, so that most are afraid of her and no longer know her. I am here to help change that. This is the time for the feminine to come to the front, to lead in this progression into the new age. And I didn't realize first receiving this message, but as I received the rest of the book, I came to understand this was her thesis statement. This is really what the whole book is about. She's talking about this transition into the new age and what we all need to be able to make this transition. And what she is communicating again and again is that the biggest thing is that we need to strengthen the divine feminine within each one of us, men and women alike. That this will in turn allow us to strengthen the divine feminine in our culture, in our relating to one another. But first and foremost, it's within ourselves. And she identified three primary areas that are the arenas of the divine feminine. She said it's in our relationship to our body, our relationship to our sexuality, and our relationship to our emotions. And that when these three areas are strong in us, it allows a foundation for us to move into our heart and to be centered in our heart. And that is the seat of the divine feminine within each one of us. And so this was what she was focusing on throughout the book. Now, one point she made early on, and she kept reminding all of us of this throughout the book, was that this strengthening of the divine feminine is not to overpower the masculine. Not at all. The point is to come into harmony, into balance, and into union with the masculine, because the new age is about unity, and that's what she's supporting us in moving into. But because so many of us, culturally and through our training, for a very, very long time, we've been given messages that favor the masculine, the feminine within us has been suppressed. That's why she feels that at this time, what most of us need is this strengthening of the feminine. And she, within these three areas, the first one, our relationship with our body, she talked about that in the first couple of chapters, but my sense was that she felt like there was so much information available to people already about how to have a healthy relationship with our body and how to heal any issues we have with our body, that it wasn't necessary for her specifically to go into that again, that that was very available for people who want to seek that out. But she did focus on a particular area of, well, two particular areas with our body. One is healing shame that we have, any sense that there's something bad or wrong or not spiritual, not good enough about our bodies, that this is one of the things that in particular needs to be healed for that area to be strengthened. The other thing she talked about was, having a relationship with our own bodies where we see our bodies as sacred. The analogy of treating our bodies like a sacred temple. And that to me was a very beautiful analogy. She also gave a healing technique about how to bring love and healing to our bodies that's very much reminded me of the kind of healing that Yeshua, which is another name for Jesus, the Aramaic name, which is what she used in the book when referring to him, that it reminded me very much of the description of the way that he healed through bringing love and intention to whatever it was that needed healing. And so she gives a description of healing parts of our body that we have a challenge with or that we have a relationship with. And I found that to be very valuable too. So that was the first arena. The second arena she talked more about, which was about our relationship with sexuality. And as part of that, she talked about her relationship with Yeshua. In the book, she doesn't focus too much on herself. Her focus is very clearly on us and how she can help us. But she would reveal things about herself. I had the sense when she thought that it would help us. Her understanding her more would help us with our growth and our evolution. So part of what she did reveal was that she and Yeshua were in a sacred relationship. She said that they were holy husband and wife, and that they were sacred partners, and that they were prepared for this relationship by each of their respective traditions, and that her tradition was in the temple of Isis in Egypt, and that she was a priestess of Isis, and that part of her preparation was in the training of sacred sexuality within the temple tradition. And the function of sexuality in their relationship was for spiritual transformation, that through their orientation and understanding and training in sacred sexuality, it allowed them to engage their sexuality to give birth to their higher spiritual selves and to transform their light body into pure light, and also enabling Yeshua to do his work, his transformational work, which many people look at as miracles. This practice of sacred sexuality, and she talks about how we can engage sexuality in both in a healthy way and in a spiritual way. So that's the second arena that she talks about. But the third arena is the one that she really talked about the most, and that was our relationship to our emotions. And she said that she felt like for most people, that is the area that's the biggest block for us at this particular time in moving forward in our spiritual growth. And she said that there's a sacred function for emotions as well, that emotions are meant to take us to God, but that most of us never learned this pathway and how to do it. It was never modeled to us. No one taught it to us. And for the most part, we didn't learn it. And additionally, we learn things that actually block this process. So the majority of the book is devoted to her explaining this process and giving examples in all different contexts about how we can relate to emotions the way that she's talking about, in a way that connects us with God.
It sounds like after 2,000 years that now she is giving this information through you, Mercedes, that all relationships we have with our partner, and I think people that have met their twin soul are very lucky. But were Yeshua and Mary Magdalene also twin souls?
I believe that they were. It's not something that she has confirmed or denied in her communications to me. In general, she doesn't She doesn't focus on herself or on Yeshua that much, more on Yeshua than on herself. And to me, that was very much like what I and sense about the way they were working when they were physically manifest 2,000 years ago, that at that time they weren't focusing in their work with others. They weren't talking about themselves and focusing on themselves. They were focusing on God first and foremost, and secondly on how they could help people to connect with God. And that she consistently wanted to talk about in all of her messages.
Yes. Mercedes, I have a question about Mary Magdalene. What is it that she shared with you about the shift of the ages, of the a new age coming, related to angelic beings or ascended masters, or maybe even galactic beings would be coming to us around this time? Because I am myself, and the listeners are, I think, quite interested in this. If anything was revealed by Mary Magdalene about this,
in her message, she really didn't talk about that. She did talk a little bit about the new age that, and she called it by different things. At one point, she said we're moving into the age of Aquarius. Well, she may not have said that. That might have been my commentary, but she was confirming that we're moving into a new age, and this will be the age of unity consciousness. But she was very focused on what's happening right now with us rather than the future, and moving us forward into this new age. And in that sense, reminds me very much of a woman, in that she was extremely practical. Her focus was on what do you need to do to prepare and to help yourself to make this shift. And she wasn't focusing on what the shift will be like or what will be happening in the future. She was focusing on us, and here's the work you need to do to support this process.
Yes, all right. And are there specific clues or methods, or is there a specific advice that Mary Magdalene gave in the messages to you that we can apply to ourselves to grow spiritually and to enhance our consciousness?
Yes, much so. In the arenas that I was talking about, relative to our bodies, our sexuality, and our emotions, she is definitely giving suggestions in those. And again, the one she went into with the most depth and detail was relative to our emotions. And what she says, she describes a process with our emotions where she said, the first thing is to understand that most people at this time, when they have emotions arise, have a pattern of trying to get out of the emotion. And of course, she's talking primarily about uncomfortable emotions or painful emotions. She said most of us don't have a problem when we're feeling happy or joyful or pleasurable emotions, although she did acknowledge that sometimes if those are too strong, that's difficult for people too. But in general, those aren't the ones we have a challenge with. The ones that most people have difficulty with are when we encounter pain. And so she said that for most of us, we have patterns and habits built up where we try to get out of pain when we're in pain. And she said, so the first thing is to recognize that, and to, rather than trying to figure out how to get out of the pain and do something to fix it, instead of that, to allow yourself to merge with the pain, to allow yourself to open to it and to merge with it. And in one of the chapters, she talked about this being like the dark night of the soul, and that when we face our pain and open to it, for many of us, that's what it can feel like, is that metaphor of the dark night of the soul, going into something that feels like, oh no, if I do this, what's going to happen? I may get stuck in this forever, or it may overwhelm me, it may even kill me, who knows? At some level, that's the level of resistance or fear that many of us experience. And so she's counteracting that for us and saying, She understands that that's what many of us are afraid of, but when we do this process, we will discover that that's not actually what happens. And so she is urging us to recognize that we're experiencing pain, to relax and open to it to the point of letting ourselves merge with it. And then she says, at that point, there's a choice we have. There's two different responses that will both support us. There's kind of a simple and then a little bit more, perhaps, say, technical. The simple one is from that point is to open to God and to ask for God's help, to ask for God to guide you in whatever needs to occur relative to this situation and the pain that you're in. And she assures us that that is a powerful and effective process, and that the function of pain always is to connect us with God. And so if we allow that, this allow to open to God and to ask for God's help, then it will have done its work. The second way that she recommends that has a little bit more of a specific process to it is she describes that the real function of pain is to connect us to what she calls our inner divine qualities. And she says these are beautiful qualities that our pain is always emanating out of, and that the real function of pain is to be a guide, to direct us to these qualities. And I think the best way for me to explain this is to give an example. In the book, there are many examples, and there's also a chart that talks about these qualities and lists many of them, and I think that helps to get a feeling for what they are. But let me give an example, and I think that also is a good start. So let's say that this is a very ordinary, everyday example that I tried to come up with. Let's say that you're driving and someone cuts you off in traffic, and you feel upset because of what the other driver just did. And there's a couple different ways you might respond to this. One is you might get angry. You might, you know, feel like swearing at the other driver, you know, telling them what they should do or whatever. Or you might, if you're trying to have a more spiritual response, you might try to stay centered and detach from the situation, maybe even send blessings to the other driver. But either way, you're having some kind of a reaction to what just happened. And what the process that Mary is suggesting is a different kind of process than either one of those. So what she's suggesting is that, let's take this situation again where you're driving, someone cuts you off. She says, allow yourself to experience the feeling that you're having. So the feeling might be anger. That might be what's arising. For some people, it's actually rage. And to just allow it, to allow yourself to have the experience, not to try to put it on the other driver, not to try to make it go away and change what your experience is. Just have the experience you're having. And even open to it. So there's a sense of no resistance, that you're opening and merging with the experience. So let's say that you were having the experience of anger, the feeling of anger. So you open to that, and then you allow that to lead you to what's at the root of the anger. And these are what she calls our inner divine qualities. And one way of thinking of these are that they're an inherent part of our divine nature that each of us has within us. And actually, we have the same qualities within us. It's kind of like the human DNA. And it's what connects us with the divine. At one point, she likened it to being like keys on a musical instrument, and all together, all of those keys constitute our humanly divine song. So, getting back to the driving example, let's say you're experiencing your anger, you've opened up to it, and you let that leading you to what are these qualities that the anger is sourcing out of. And what you might connect with is that this anger is coming out of your need and your longing for safety, that you need to be safe when you drive, and also for longing for consideration and cooperation by other drivers. So these might be what's really underneath your anger and what the anger is actually sourcing out of. You're longing for these beautiful qualities of safety, consideration, and cooperation. And what she says is that when you connect with these underlying divine qualities, the feeling has done its work. It's taken you to these qualities, and what happens is the feeling starts to recede. It'll either recede to the background or it'll go away altogether, dissolve, because it's complete now. It's taken you back to connection with yourself and these divine qualities within yourself. And by connecting with these divine qualities, a shift happens where you shift from this sense of disturbance because there was a sense of lack. You weren't getting these qualities fulfilled, to reconnecting with them inside yourself. And in that reconnection, there's a sense of wholeness again. There's a sense of your connection to safety in its cooperation. And these are qualities of yourself, but they're also qualities of the divine. So you're not only connecting with yourself, you're reconnecting with God through this. What happens, the shift occurs, for most people, what they will experience is a sense of peace. They'll come to peace. And the disturbance in whatever form it was that you were having prior to that will dissolve, and you will be in peace. And there will also usually be a sense of expansion with this. And in some situations, that's all you need. You're complete at that point. In some situations, that is a platform from which you're going to take action. But at that point, your action will be coming from a different place. It won't be coming from your reaction. It won't be coming from your sense of deficiency or really disconnection from God. It's going to be coming from your already connection, already being connected to God, already being full, whole, at peace. And so, in most cases, your actions will be different, and you'll be coming from a different place. That is the biggest process she recommends in the book, and she recommends it in many different circumstances and in many different contexts, but that's what she keeps coming back to, is that if we could learn that, learn how to relate to our emotions and allow them to support us in staying connected to God, it would help us more than anything else to move into our heart, and that's the platform from which we're going to create this unity of our sacred heart and sacred mind in marriage together.
Well, in fact, I must tell you, Mercedes, that I myself feel very connected to this way that you describe, that we should get in touch with our emotions. And I have experienced situations that I have merged with my emotions and come to this point of unity. And I think many more listeners will have had similar experiences.
Yes. In some ways, in a not as dramatic way, in a milder form, you might say, it's something like the experience of union that people experience through sexuality. It's a very ecstatic process that you go through of reconnecting to your wholeness and reconnecting to God.
Yes, because God is the source from all that is, from all life forms, from all matter, all dimensions. Has Mary Magdalene spoken to you about how we can improve our relationships with our loved ones?
I'm taking a moment to consider this. She's mostly working with our relationship with ourselves, but it's very obvious to me that when we do the kind of work she's recommending, it will change all our relationships. For example, she talks in the latter part of the book, she talks about problems with our mind that a lot of us get into. And one of them that she references a number of times is the problem of blame. Blaming other people for things. She talks a lot about the idea of right and wrong and how this is one of our biggest challenges is going beyond, in the third dimension, is going beyond the idea of right and wrong. At the higher dimensions, they don't relate to the world in this way, and she sees that it creates a lot of our pain, is this thinking of right and wrong. And she talks about our mental challenges relating to this very much, and one of them is blame. And in the case of blame, you're saying that someone else is wrong, or someone else is at fault, or someone else wronged you. There's some sense of them either being wrong or having done something wrong. But what she says is that the key to dealing with blame is not trying to fix what's in your mind. She said that our mind is actually trying to compensate for this weakness in our emotional patterning that most of us have. And the way that we will solve these kinds of problems is by working with our emotions. She said when we're acting in blaming someone, what we're actually doing is we're in some kind of pain, usually emotional pain, and it's a way of trying to get out of that pain. And one of the techniques that many of us have developed is to use blame. So we're taking the energy of our pain and we're directing it at someone else, and then using our thoughts and our words to send that pain away from us towards someone else through the process of blame. So she says that, again, what will solve this is relating to our pain differently. We're going to the source. We're not dealing with the We're going right to the source, which is healing our pain that we have and returning once again to our wholeness. So she recommends a very similar process for that kind of situation. But in our relationships, if we have a tendency to be blaming in our relationships and use this process he's giving us, it's going to definitely change our relationships, and it's going to open up. All of this is supporting our opening up of the heart. So obviously, as we're able to open our heart and live in our heart and remain seated in our heart, our relationships are going to be more and more about love, because that's what the function of the heart is. So clearly, it will change our relationships. I think more than just our personal relationships, it will change our world. I have no question about that.
Yes, it's so beautiful to live from the heart. And one of my great examples that love is emanating from the heart is little grandmother. But I see that more and more people like yourself, Mercedes, are coming with beautiful messages about the restoration of the divine feminine energy and the balancing of the masculine and feminine energies. So I see that we are heading to a time where we are more in contact with our heart. And I'm very happy that you are here and that you received this book. So maybe it's an interesting idea to share your website and how can people find your book. So maybe you could share some information with the listeners about it.
Thank you. I would be so happy with that, because I can say this is what Mary Magdalene wants. She wants to connect with people. And I see so many people connecting with her at this time. To me, it's like a groundswell of our awakening. And so I think that so many people are hungry and ripe for this information. So it's my great joy to share it with people. So is www.marymagdalenebeckons.com, and I'll spell that out. It's Mary, M-A-R-Y, Magdalene, M-A-G-D-A-L-E-N-E, Beckons, B-E-C-K-O-N-S.com. And the book is available through the website. And there's also a lot more information about the book there. There's a video trailer and all sorts of things that are available. And the book is available on Amazon. It's available Amazon US and also the Amazon Europe sites as well, which I'm very happy about. And I found out this morning that the US Amazon website has discounted the book, and so it's a lower price, so even more good news.
Well, very good, Miss Edith. So it took you a few months, you told in the beginning of the show, to write a book when this presence of Mary Magdalene was coming to you. Do you expect that Mary Magdalene will contact you in the future and give you more information to write a second book?
The second book is already underway. She couldn't wait to begin the second book. And she was trying to be patient and wait for me, but it's already started. And in the second book, the next book, she's specifically focusing on sacred sexuality and giving me instructions for sacred sexuality, which I've come to realize at a certain point, it's the process that a temple priestess in the Temple of Isis would have been taken through in learning the practice of sacred sexuality of Isis. And so she's giving me these messages with this instruction. And this book is going to have a slightly different form. The first book is very pure in a certain way and very universal. She's absolutely speaking to everyone. And my book is simply to support her word being understood and people taking it in. But it's a very pure universal message. In this second, she's working very specifically with me. What she wants me to do in this book that I will be doing is sharing the story as she's giving me these messages of working with it and what's happening in my life and my relationship as a result of these messages. So in some ways it reminds me of the Carlos Castaneda books, the way there was a master teacher working with a student, and you hear about not only the process, the lessons, but all that the student's going through in receiving this teaching. And it's going to be that kind of a book.
Yes. Does sacred sexuality have anything to do with tantric rituals?
Well, it kind of depends exactly what you or anyone else is meaning when they use the word tantra, because tantra is a word that has been used in many different contexts and means many different things to different people. But originally, I believe it did refer to sacred sexuality, and it was the same thing within the Indian tradition. There are many different traditions for sacred sexuality. You'll find, you know, the teachings of sacred sexuality in Egypt, in India, in China, in Hawaii culture, in the Native American culture, and probably many more that we don't know of or I don't know of. But it's something that has been in many cultures and often was a secret teaching. In India, it certainly was a secret teaching, and likewise in other cultures. And like so many things at this time, there's a shift happening. And the beings who have been the protectors of this sacred information are saying now it's not necessary for it to be secret anymore. Now it can come out in the open, and it can help people, and it can be made available to people. And so these practices of sexuality are part of that process.
Yes. I must tell you that I have a friend, and I think she is my twin soul. Sometimes when we are just near each other, sitting on the couch or something, I feel that by being in a certain state of love and appreciation, we are already exchanging sexual energy, but by rarely touching each other. We don't need to be physical to feel this.
Absolutely. And as we move into the higher dimensions, our sexuality will become less and less physical. It's fundamentally about an exchange of this etheric energy. And it's part of our unity consciousness and our unity experience that we're moving into. And this is one of the great wonders and joys of sacred sexuality, is that truly you can be having this exchange all the time. It does not require physical contact. Being in the same space physically, you could have this exchange long distance with another person. And this is part of what we're moving into as we transition into the higher dimensions, is this greatly expanded capacity for sharing love with other beings.
Yes, because I think pardon me, that love is really the key, and that all life, all sentient life, but not only sentient life, but that all life, the goal to evolve in life is through love. And when you go back to the source, the only way to go back to source is via the heart and via love. And that's the example that Sananda or Yeshua and Mary Magdalene and many others have shown us. So that's just beautiful.
Yes. What Mary Magdalene, part of what she's expressing in the book, she's talking about the nature of God, and she said that there was initially pure source, undivided. And then out of that began the process of coming into manifestation by degrees, by levels. And the very first step down from pure source was this, it's kind of like a cell dividing into two cells. It was the split, the division into Mother God and Father God. And out of that, all other manifestations came through that original first division. And so we all us this code, you might say, this relationship of our wholeness being understood as having masculine and feminine in unity. And so it's part of who we are, and it's part of the divine also. And that's part of why Mary Magdalene is so strong, why she lives within so many people, because her union with Yeshua was this reflection of the divine Mother, Father, God. And we all know that. We all, at some level of our being, recognize it because it's who we are also. And so we have this union within ourselves. We enjoy this union and celebrate this union with other individuals, other beings. And we recognize it in all, ultimately, because that the nature of our reality as we experience it.
Yes, it reminds me of the Vaisa pieces, the one circle that becomes two circles, that become three circles, that become six circles, and then become the flower of life.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Listeners,
was there something else that you were asking?
Yeah, I'm saying that we are at the end of the show, actually, because there's a show after us. So if there's anything you would like to share really quickly that you think is important to share with the listeners.
Well, I would love to share a last quote from Mary Magdalene if we have time for that.
We have about 1 minute.
Okay, I think we can do this. I'll do it as quickly as I can. And this is from the book. She says, I and so many others are calling to you to join us in the river of love that flows from your heart. It is a place of great joy and love and peace. It is the place of connection with God, of growing in God, of being guided by God, of living in God, of living as God. I do not know of anything more wonderful than that. I do this because I love you, because I know you as God. And I am not different from you. This is your destiny too. So thank you so much for having me on the show, Martin.
And thank you for being here, Mercedes. And you had an important message to share. And whenever you want to come back, when your second book is finished, you're welcome. I would like to have you back as a guest, maybe in a few months. So I want to thank the listeners for being here with us. And thank you, Mercedes, and namaste.
Namaste.